Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Thanks for listening to the Lakers Fast Break Podcast, part of the Hoopheads Podcast Network. Check out all their awesome basketball shows today at hoopheadspod.com. Of the Lakers Fast Break Podcast. It's Jared Glasser. Come right back at you here from Lakers Fast Break, Pop Culture Cosmos, Inside Sports, Fantasy Football, and Game Source. We truly appreciate everyone out there listening to all of our shows. And if you can, please give us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts, or a thumbs up or a subscribe on YouTube. Or you can do what you can to go ahead and like, share, subscribe, follow, or do anything that you can to support us right here at the Lakers Fast Break. Also, the great folks at LakersBall.com. Also, the great folks at LakerHolics.com. Plus, the great folks at the Pop Culture Cosmos, where we cover the latest news and trends of pop culture. Inside Sports Fantasy Football, where we cover the latest goings-on in the NFL Draft. Game Source, where they cover the latest news and information in the world of video games. And so much more. Plus, again, the great folks at LakerHolics.com. Please go ahead and check out the latest articles from Jamie Sweet at Five Things and Laker Tom right there for you at LakerHolics.com. Be part of the conversation today at LakersBall.com, where Onks 1947, Joe Soro, he takes the reins of many a conversation going on there. Please go ahead and be part of the conversation today right there for you at LakersBall.com. Plus, our good friends at the Hoopheads Podcast Network. They've got a ton of great shows waiting right there for you, including ours. So please go ahead and support them today at the Hoopheads Podcast Network at hoopheadspod.com. If you can support all of that, it is sincerely appreciated. Well, we know the NBA playoffs are still going on and the Lakers are still in Cancun and fishing and doing all that great stuff that they do during the summer vacation when they don't make the playoffs. There's still the intriguing drama going on regarding the coaching position. A couple new names have been added into the mix. Terry Stotts, former head coach for several years at Portland. And also, Mr. Hand Down himself. Mark Jackson was also interviewed this past week, so we're going to be talking about that. We're also going to be talking about the end of season one for Winning Time on HBO and HBO Max. How did it relate to Showtime, Jeff Perlman's book? In fact, I interviewed Jeff Perlman not once, but twice on both of his books. So please go ahead and check out my back episodes with Jeff Perlman. But how did this show, based off of this book right here, Showtime, how did that end up? Well, I think we know how it ended up. But we're going to go ahead and talk about some of the changes coming up on the show as well. Plus, also, we're going to be talking again about an NBA playoff update because the playoffs are getting a little bit nastier, a little bit chippier. Some people accusing others of some foul play. We're seeing some dirty play. So we're going to talk about, is there a lot of dirty play going on in the NBA? And the most important thing I wanted to cover on tonight is I am going to go ahead and put these guys in charge of the Los Angeles Lakers. And if they were in charge, what is the first question they would try to answer? We're going to go ahead and talk about that today on the show as well. But first, it is the coaching carousel continues. I feel like I'm on a merry-go-round because they are interviewing seemingly everyone. We've talked about all the assistants, Adrian Griffin, Darvin Ham that they've already interviewed. This past week, they interviewed Mark Jackson, the ABC announcer and former Golden State head coach. And also as well, they interviewed Mr. Terry Stotts, someone we forgot about because he's been kind of out of the limelight since he got fired from Portland. So first up is first man indeed. If he sits down right there for you, it is the man behind LakerHolics.com. I caught you standing up. It is Laker Tom. And Laker Tom, you're first up on the list on today's game show called The Price is Wrong for the Lakers. But I want to hear your thoughts on this coaching carousel indeed. I mean, is anyone that they're interviewing really of interest to this team? Is it the best thing for the team? I know you've talked about established coaches for LeBron at this point in time, but is anyone moving the needle for you now?
When you balance between the attainability of being able to get this guy to be the coach of the Lakers versus what kind of coach he would be, it's not easy. I mean, it does seem obvious that one of the reasons that the Lakers are slow walking the coaching search is wanting to see what happens with Utah and Quinn Snyder, and also what happens with Philadelphia and Doc Rivers. Now, depending on what you think of Doc and Quinn, that's good news or bad news, you know. Mike Brown was hired by the Sacramento Kings, so
yes, he was.
Takes one more guy off of there. And, you know, and I give the Kings some credit because I thought they were going to hire Jackson, and I've not been a Mark Jackson fan like you. No. But I do think Mike Brown's been involved in a winning situation in Golden State, and I think that finding somebody who can hopefully provide some stability over the next few years and is a respected coach who comes from a winning program, I think will be good for the Kings. As for the Lakers, I've always been a fan of Quinn Snyder because of his embrace of the three-point shot. They've always, his Utah teams have always been among the top two or three teams in the league in three-point attempts and three-point percentage. And I've always respected him as a defensive coach, very similar, plays, you know, the drop coverage that Frank Vogel has always played. And so I think that, you know, he's a good defensive coach, and he's a respected guy. And I think he comes off that he could be a good for the Los Angeles. I guess where I'm at right at this point in time is that I kind of hope that we'll end up. I'm kind of rooting that Phil Handy will get a chance at being the coach of the team. And there's a couple of reasons that I think that's really important. Number one, I think that of all of the assistant coaches around the league that are flexible enough that they could be able to be in a rebuild situation as well as a veteran situation, I think Phil falls into that category because his strength really would be in a rebuilding situation because of his great hands-on ability to coach and teach people, you know, different moves in order to improve their prowess and so forth. But I tend to see him as more of an offensive coach, but I think, you know, his nickname involves 94 feet, which is the length of the court, which means defense and offense. And I think he'll have the respect of LeBron and AD. And there's just something about his judgment, his ability to judge what players can do and what situations they'll play best in, that I think he might be really good at putting together lineups and rotations. And man, that would be, for a Lakers fan, that would be wonderful to, you know, to at least go out there every game with the team that you thought was the best team. You know, I've been so tired of going out there with at least one or two players that, why are we playing this guy, you know? So, you know, I'm rooting for Phil. I think that he's obviously one of the most coveted assistant coaches. And so he'll get his opportunity. I wish I knew more about, I did an internet search trying to find more about his philosophy and so forth. And there were a few articles and so forth, but it was good to see him speak up and say that he's ready for a head coaching job and so forth. And you would expect out of nothing more than respect for the job that he's done for the Lakers the last 3 years and his role in the championship. And he is, you know, he's won like three or four championships now, I think. You'd expect that the Lakers would give him the courtesy and the respect of having an interview at some point in time.
Well, there you go. Good thoughts indeed to Phil Handy. Will he become part of that equation as far as the coaching carousel is concerned? We'll see. But also here today is a good man indeed. You got to go ahead and check out him as Ox1947 right there in the chat rooms in and around LakersBall.com. It is Joe Soro. Joe, great to have you back, my friend. I wanted to go ahead and hear your thoughts on this. I know you've had some distinct thoughts on the coaching carousel as it is and who you think they should lean to. I know that Jay Wright is still a hope for you. I mean, he still hints on maybe possibly going out of retirement into the NBA. Your thoughts on this coaching carousel as it continues to go ahead and go round and round.
There's been no definite path yet. Terry Stotts is like the first bit of news that's been confirmed in terms of an interview and then Mark Jackson and all that. I don't think they're going to be in a hurry here, and I think they should continue to have that kind of mindset. The coach of the LA Lakers can't just be someone who's good at developing players and good in the locker room. There's another job, unfortunately, that they have to do, and that's wrangle the inertia, the whatever that's around a franchise like the Lakers. Phil Handy has the skill set, but I don't know if he wants to deal with the other side of this stuff. I think he'd get frustrated and kind of lose his patience with it. He seems to be a pretty upfront type of guy. And there's really no wiggle room there to go beyond that. There's no Pat Riley's coming anywhere. That's another man that was able to deal with things. Phil Jackson was another man who I used to be very entertained by because he'd always have those funny, snide, backdoor comments that if, you know, you were smart enough, you could decipher and giggle about. Who's out there that can do that? I think Jay Wright is the only one. That's why I'm there, you know, with him still. Anyone else, it's just going to feel like it's a stopgap. I don't know if they're going to truly try to find someone that's going to be the coach for the next 5 to 10 years. I don't know. I have no idea. I'm not getting any feeling either way. I wish they did because it would build the stability. But in the end, there's really no stability with LA. LA is always full of drama, whether we're winning with drama, whether we're not winning with drama, there's always something there. And then when there's no drama, usually we're not doing too well anyways, and that's the drama in itself. Yeah, I'm kind of indifferent at this moment with the coaching. We haven't heard anything about player acquisitions or anything like that either. So we're kind of in dead space right now. And I'm sure they're doing their due diligence to make sure that they're going to want to go a certain direction. Do they want an up-and-coming star or up-and-coming coach, or do they want to play the safe route and go with Quinn or someone they're familiar with that's got a little bit of experience? I don't know. I don't know. I can honestly say I do not know which way. I haven't heard anything, and that might be good. They might be keeping it close to the chest and just letting things develop as they go.
You know, if B. Garcia was here, he'd be saying Jared Dudley right now. So no. Just saying that. I saw him on the sidelines today. So I'm thinking that right now if he was here. But also here today to talk about the coaching situation is a good man indeed as well. You got to catch him because he's doing some five things, like five stars for us on Apple Podcasts. It is five things with Jamie Sweet, Mr. Admiral Akbar himself. Jamie, good to have you back, my friend. I hope you're all as well. Angels still winning, just barely ahead of the Astros. Still got that pitching, amazing. You know, Otani and Trout still healthy, amazing. Laker Tom's Yankees and Joe's Dodgers. Well, that's not so amazing because that's probably what we thought that would happen with those two teams. But, hey, you know what? There you go right there for you. But your thoughts on the coaching situation going on, it is still at this point out there, kind of like they're just putting out feelers, putting out interviews, doing second interviews, I'm sure, in the not too distant future. Do you think that actually they might go outside the box and surprise everyone with their next coaching hire?
No.
Somebody that we're not looking at?
No.
Jamie, just once.
No. This is my first off, I don't think anybody's – this is like the preseason of the search, right? Like, I don't think the Lakers even probably – and this is probably the most dismaying aspect of this. But I bet even money that the Lakers don't even have a solid foundation on what they want in a coach. I mean, I think, you know, based on the last coaching search conducted by Rob Pelinka, that they want somebody who is open to meddling from the front office and can deal with leaks and can deal with like a fair amount of, you know, internal backstabbing at a decent level, you know, like that's what defined the end of the Frank won us the title, right? Like the end of the Frank Vogel era was just quite inglorious based on his contributions to the franchise. And I think that's going to be working against him in this immediate coaching search. If we're slow walking the coaching search because we're waiting for somebody to get fired, that's the max of a complete and total lack of creativity to me. There's no inspiration. There's no true visionary leadership. There's just, well, we need another company man. What's the best company man we can get? And we'll go with that guy. Who's the guy that's going to, you know, let us kind of have our little say in our staff, and who's going to, you know, get Mike Penberthy a job or for whatever reason. You know, those are the things that define the last coaching search, right? That was why four people turned the job down before Frank Vogel took it. So, you know, if this is going to work out that way, then, you know, this is probably going to end up being a fairly underwhelming hire. And it'll, you know, and that's nothing against any of the coaches who may or may not get fired. I don't see Doc Rivers being fired. He's under contract for two more seasons. I don't see Nick Nurse getting fired. Masai Uriji has come out and said exactly that. Phil Handy actually has come out and said he doesn't want to coach a rebuilding team. That he's like, if I get a coaching job, I want it to be a team that's like ready to rock, man. I don't want to spend a season or two doing what happened to Mark Jackson. Mark Jackson spent a couple of seasons honing the Golden State Warriors into a winning franchise and was summarily dismissed. And Steve Kerr walked in and became a living legend, you know, and that's not a knock against Steve Kerr. I think Steve Kerr has a lot of great coaching chops and has a good mind for the game and relates well with both star players and role players, which I think is really the thing you need to find in your head coach. You need somebody who's going to be able to get the most out of the guys who don't get the most spotlight shown on them. And you need to keep the guys who have the spotlight shined on them the most happy and engaged and positive. So who amongst these, you know, this laundry list of characters who may or may not be in the running, I have no clue. If it were me, if I were the one conducting the search, I would want somebody who, probably because of having LeBron on the team, AD on the team, but more so LeBron, I'd want somebody who had at least been around the NBA game, which is why I think it's going to – that's why I think a college coach or somebody who's only coached in college and never played in the NBA, at least, is beyond a dark horse long shot. You know, it's like the Kentucky Derby kind of long shot. You know, ridiculous odds. Not saying it can't happen, just that to me feels like the unlikeliest result of the coaching search. So I you know, even if it's an assistant who hasn't had a head coaching job, you know, Mike Brown, obviously assistant now, head coaching experience. Fizdale, same. You know, there's a lot of guys who've done both sides of the chair in terms of their coaching skills. But if it's somebody who's only been an assistant but has also played in the game, had, you know, a role or a, you know, been part of a title team, I could see them maybe getting a little bit of a leg up because they can at least relate to what everybody's going through on the team when in tough times. So, but I don't know. I really do think it's going to come down, unfortunately, to who is the most willing to deal with everything outside of basketball. And who is the most willing to, you know, sort of embrace the aura of the Lakers in front of embracing the actual sort of dumpster fire that is currently the Laker franchise.
Well, there you go from there. And someone who's very interested to see what's going on. Again, it's Joe Soro. Joe, before we head to the next subject, I want to hear some final thoughts from you on this. I mean, you've been a very staunch supporter of Jay Wright. Is there anyone out there that we're not seeing that you think might fit the bill for this position?
No, not right now that's available.
Right.
I believe the NBA head coach is the most difficult coaching chair in sports. It's just difficult in a game where you're paying someone, let's say even if you're paying him well, you're paying him about $8 to $9 million, right? Let's say he's making a good amount of money. They're still getting paid $30 million to $40 million less than the star of the team. So if that star isn't mentally strong, like a Tim Duncan, a Magic Johnson, a Giannis Antetokounmpo, I can never say his last name.
Antetokounmpo.
And that's kind of weird too, because I can speak three languages, but for some reason I can't say his last name. But anyways, so there's those type of players that are needed in a to help a coach be successful. I'd say AD has that capability to kind of not be a wrench if, let's say, the coach called about practice or anything like that. I've never heard any issues with AD and a coach in his entire career, NBA career, college or anything. So how do you work around that then? What are we going to do? And LeBron is, again, I don't know what his next goal is. Unfortunately, we have to kind of get him to buy into whatever we end up getting. And what can we get that's going to make him happy? Has he ever been happy with any of his coaches in his career? I don't think he's really gave much. He's always giving support to coaches that have never coached him. That's kind of what he does with other players as well. But I am in a position right now. Usually I have some direction somewhere, you know, some kind of inkling of something. But at this moment, I have no clue what's going to happen here. I have no idea. I don't think they're waiting for Quinn Snyder. I know that makes, you know, being Laker fans and dealing with kind of their incompetency, you would like to think in a little bit that that's what they're doing. But I don't think that's what it is. I truly believe they don't know who to get. And we're in the same boat. I don't know who they should get. I mean, I know who I want, but it doesn't look like there's any direction there. And I just hope that my instincts are telling me we want to go with someone fresh, someone who can be here 5 to 10 years. Is that even possible?
No.
Then this is a sad situation for us. We're going to have to come back in 2 or 3 years with the same crap.
I mean, let's be honest. The list of coaches who coach in one place for 5 to 10 years is pretty short at this point.
Yeah, you need a star like a Giannis who's going to be there for 10 years, and then you're there reaping the benefits of being able to coach someone who's not selfish, who will take criticism in front of a team. And if you don't have that, you're not going to really have a lot of stability in the NBA. You can still win. And I've said this several times. The reason why LeBron James has won 4 championships is because he's insanely talented. Sometimes talent does carry you, and it carries you more in the NBA than any other sport. I'll take a bad hire and win a championship. Everybody thinks Vogel was a bad hire. I don't think he was. I thought he was the perfect coach for what they needed, and he ended up winning a championship. Only 5 coaches in Laker history have won a championship. He's one of them. And that's a team that's been around for, what, since 1948 in the official NBA? I know they were in the NBL before that, and then the BAA came together and all that. So it's been, you know, decades. Only 5 coaches have won championships as a Laker head coach. And the treatment was embarrassing. I think those are the things that bother me. I think those are the things that really bother me. The PPP loan and that, and there's just a lot of classless stuff that doesn't, that isn't Jerry necessary. West. Jerry West's season tickets.
Yeah.
This is not somebody being unintelligent. This is someone or something or whatever being just
petty.
Petty.
It's a team without an identity.
Yep.
On the court and off of the court.
So Magic tried to – Magic was there for, what, 2 years?
Basically.
And he left, and I always use the analogy, as he ratted on the family.
Yeah.
Right? He said what was going on behind the scenes. And our frustration with Magic was, why do you keep doing press conferences about you wanting to train guys like Ben Simmons? Like, does he not know the rules of tampering? Like, that was the part that always confused me about Magic. And then, of course, he had a parting gift of trading Zubac for Muscala. And I was just sitting there going, wow, okay. He dropped the bomb and left. And that seems to be what happens with a lot of these guys. They just want to drop a bomb and leave just to say, hey, eat this. But it's a confusing family. They keep running and coming back, running and coming back. It's like coming back to an abusive relationship. And we're the ones having to watch it and wonder, what is going on here? Why do you keep going back to the abuser?
Yeah. Because you're winning.
Okay. So that's the weird. So you look at, let's say, the Bulls in the 90s, right? You remember all that turmoil with Reinsdorf and Krause? They still won. Lakers, they've been winning with drama, whether it was Kobe and Shaq at each other's necks, whether it's Phil wanting to trade Kobe for Jason Kidd, Sean Marion and all this, they still won. And then you got LeBron and this going on with Vogel and this, and they're still winning. So we're stuck. We're stuck. There's no like direction. Like, okay, if they're a disaster, they're not winning, right? That's usually how things work out. But these guys are the only people that I've known other than the Bulls in the 90s where it's a disaster and they're still winning. Heck, they made a show about it. They made a show about it, and this happened in the early 80s. And the confusion about that is you have Paul Westhead, who was this run-and-gun guy who had the greatest run-and-gun player in the history of the NBA. And then for some reason, 2 years after they win a championship, Magic's not having fun anymore. Why? Because Westhead decided to, I want to slow down maybe some things. It's a very confusing team. It really is when you start to get to the heart of it. It's a very confusing team. If I didn't know any better, I would think they're doing this on purpose. There's some kind of marketing genius behind the team saying, look, guys, you guys want to make a lot of money? You want to be the biggest franchise on the planet? Let's create some BS. Let's just create it. Who cares, right? Hey, they do it in show business. This is kind of considered show business.
No bad press.
No bad press, right? No, maybe that's what they're doing. It's Hollywood.
This is true. That's for the Lakers. But
I don't know where else to go with it. I really don't. I just want to win number 18. And right now I'm just that's really all I want. I want to pass the green turds. Milwaukee is playing like
our favorite team right now, Milwaukee.
Milwaukee is playing like the world champs they are. If they can just dispatch of Boston. And again, I do feel bad for the first time in my life. I do feel bad because just a tiny bit, because I do like Marcus Smart. I do like Tatum. I do like Jaylen Brown. I like Udoka as a coach. They're a very likable team, but they're wearing the wrong jersey. I wish they were just Charlotte or New Orleans. At that point, I would be cheering for them. But they cannot get 18. Otherwise, this whole situation turns worse because we were fully expecting 2 years ago to go back-to-back, and we were close until AD went down. And that gets exasperated if Boston ends up winning the title this year. It would be just disastrous.
And the fact we have few assets for down the road makes building this team.
And it's very likely, according to Laker Tom, that they're going to be trading those things to get a couple buckets for a couple years. And then when those years come in, we'll be like, why did we trade those draft picks? Oh my God. It went to the New York Knicks in some three-way trade or whatever.
We have a draft pick every other year. We have a draft pick, a first round pick. every other year.
Yeah, but 27 guaranteed, and 29.
Guaranteed by the NBA CBA.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, that's true. But I want to ask you this before we head to the break and also head to something else as far as what we're talking about. In relation to this, if we were control, the last thing I want us to talk about in regards to this is we understand as far as the coaching part of it, who the candidates might be. But what about the people choosing this candidate? Because we all say Rob Pelinka, but in recent weeks we've heard the Rambai, we've heard about Phil Jackson, we've heard about Magic Johnson, we've heard about Jeannie Buss. Who is actually making the decision on the next coach for the Los Angeles Lakers, Tom?
Rob Pelinka.
Are you sure? 100%? Yeah, absolutely. Clutch Sports? You've been saying Clutch Sports has been running things.
I never said Clutch Sports running things. I said it's an advantage that the Lakers have over every other
it's
club.
It's a symbiosis.
At the number two sports agency in the NBA with the most players, the most second most players, second most all-stars, second most max contracts, is Clutch Sports. And to have them be a partner and an alliance, an ally with you in bringing players to the team, in evaluating talent and so forth, all of those things count, and that's a big advantage that the Lakers are going to definitely – it's not going to end with LeBron James because he's just one of 35 players that Clutch Sports has under contract. But I
he
think
is
the
Clutch Sports.
Pardon?
He is Clutch Sports. He's right. The guy.
No, that's the mistake that most people make because Clutch has over $2 billion in contracts that they've done. They have over $450 million.
LeBron is the
same per year in contracts.
Maverick Carter doesn't exist without LeBron, and they found Rich Paul selling printers in his trunk or whatever it was. It's LeBron James.
I don't think it makes any sense to take a guy who's made a successful business in both cases and demean them just because they happen to be childhood friends of LeBron James.
I demean them because it's entertainment. That's why I just wanted to say selling printers out of a trunk.
I think what's pretty amazing about LeBron James in a manner is that not only did he happen to choose a couple of friends to help them get started in business, but he chose two guys who have actually made an immense fortune in that business and not partly due to their relationship with LeBron, of course, but far, far more than anybody really expected. And definitely they don't, you know, and I don't think you meant this, Joe, but the whole attitude that people have that these are just homies that hung on and don't have anything to say for themselves. And Rich Paul is some sort of an appendage that is really just LeBron James running Clutch Sports. That is all total BS. Rich Paul has proven that he is a smart, smart businessman, a good judgment of basketball talent, and probably one of the major architects of the player empowerment movement that we've seen over the NBA right now. But it all comes down to Rob Pelinka having learned a lesson last year. And that's the reason why I say nobody is going to make that decision except Rob Pelinka, because that's what he's being paid for. And last year, he allowed other people to influence him to the extent that the team made a bad decision. He owns that. He knows that his job is on the line, and he has to come through this year. It's that simple. So whether Jeannie Buss wants this person or Kurt Rambis wants this person as a coach or Phil Jackson wants this person as who we should trade for, Rob Pelinka is going to take all of that information. He's going to put it all together, and then he's going to sit down and he's going to decide.
It's an interesting diagnosis on
whom we trade for and sign as free agents.
The battle of the ego, the battle of the who's smarter than the other person. You know, when you're a businessman, you run into that a lot, and when you're in a billion-dollar league and as popular as the NBA and the NFL and all these big leagues are, it's even bigger because now you've got that extra testosterone with, you know, phenomenal professional athletes. You look at the track record of LeBron and his team, and Pat Riley wouldn't cower down to their I don't know the intricacies of what went on before LeBron left again, but it ended in a way where maybe there's some decisions on Pat Riley's part where he did not relinquish. And then we know what happened with Gilbert in Cleveland. There were many reports where he was sick and tired of dealing with, even though they were winning, he was tired of dealing with all the amenities for these clutch guys. And
yeah,
this,
but that's
this
Dan
and that.
Gilbert. Come on, man.
Well, I'm just saying, it's not just Dan Gilbert, though. This
is the guy who, this is the guy responsible for turning down the, for the NBA.
I'm not defending Dan Gilbert. Dan Gilbert is one of two guys that I wish I could meet one day and say some things to him.
Yeah, because me too.
They, him and Mark Cuban, that poser in Dallas, whom complained like little girls when Mitch Kupchak made one of the what could have been one of the greatest trades of this century with CP3 coming to LA and would have likely won at least one or two championships with Kobe. So there's a lot of variables in this thing and nothing's perfect. No one's perfect. Clutch isn't. Rob isn't. Pat isn't. Jerry West wanted Cindy Moncrief versus Magic. Even the genius isn't perfect. No one's perfect. So when do we get to a point where we just have to accept that it was just that day at the casino that was just not good for you? Huh. Are you a bad blackjack player or poker player if you get run out at that time? You know, if you've been playing poker for 30 years and you're good at it, but you had this one phase in your playing time where you're just getting knocked over, is it fair to sit there and just denigrate everybody? I don't think so. I know that your heart and your brain kind of go back and forth on it, and it does for me. And a lot of it is too also getting influenced by Laker fans and kind of the Laker media. You start hearing some things, and you got to kind of just unplug a little bit and get out of it. We are in a position right now where we have to make the right call now because of how bad the calls were this last 12 months or 10 months. And then you're still not out of the water. You're not even close. You got to get rid of Westbrook and you got to bring some value back. And you're still not out of the water because you still have to wait an entire year to hope that LeBron and AD stay healthy through the playoffs. If they don't get hurt in the regular season and then they get hurt in the second round, it's back to square one again. Everyone's going to say, oh, Rob, and then they're going to go fire the trainer again and all this. It's all going to come back. When the Lakers lose, Laker fans, I'd say 90% of them, become prisoners of the moment. They don't really think clearly. They don't think in common sense factors. They feel in feelings, right? What is it going to take to get lucky at this point? What's it going to take? We have to set the table with the right coach. You got to get rid of the main cancer of a team basketball and replace him with something that's going to bring a value. And if that value is another injured player or another injured players, now what? We're going to need some luck here, boys.
That we will. That we will indeed.
This is Raphael from NBADraftJunkies.com, and you are listening to the Lakers Fast Break.
Check out what's been going on with the Pop Culture Cosmo Show and the PCC Multiverse.
Bring me all of the Star Trek all of the time, and I will be an incredibly happy girl. Even if it's terrible. It's like pizza. Bad pizza is still pretty good because it's pizza. Bad Star Trek is still pretty good because it's still Star Trek. That's the way that I look at it.
Just let it sit in the refrigerator for a day and be cold.
That's it. Yep.
That's the Pop Culture Cosmo Show.
And the PCC Multiverse.
Catch our shows on Worldwide Radio 7 days a week and wherever you get your podcasts. Let's say you guys were each given a shot at running the Lakers. You didn't have to hear from Magic. You didn't have to hear from Genie. You didn't have to hear from the Rambi. You didn't have to hear from Phil Jackson or Magic Johnson or anyone else for that matter. And you were totally, or Clutch, or because you were totally given authority to go ahead and make decisions for the team. Jamie, I'm going to start with you. Given that power, given that authority, given that control, which you in real life as a Lakers fan wish you would have. In fact, we all wish we have control of the Lakers right now, probably making different decisions. But I want to hear your thoughts. What's the first question you think you would need to solve before anything else?
Well, first, I'd look in the mirror and see that I'm actually Greg Popovich. I mean, I would say that we need
someone who whines when someone beats him. Is that Greg Popovich?
Well, he does like his wine.
He loves his wine, and he's nobody else was Greg, man. I would say our top-down culture. I thought that the Lakers had a really good opportunity to really look in the mirror when the season ended, and I don't feel like they did. I think that they looked in the mirror and looked at, you know, that shelf and behind them over there and blamed that, and looked at that lamp against the wall and blamed that, and just started, you know, looking everywhere but internally. And I feel the same way about a lot of the players. I feel like right away everybody started kind of like running to the corners where they felt safe and lobbing some easy hand grenades at Vogel or, you know, training staff or, you know, ball boy or whoever they felt comfortable blaming. And that was basically how the Lakers season ended, with a pretty pathetic blame game. So that's where I would start. I would say, like, we're going to be an organization that owns what happens. We are the decision makers. We were the ones who built the team. We were the ones that hired the coach. We were the ones that ultimately pulled the trigger on trading, you know, solid role players for a very expensive one-dimensional player who didn't fit with anybody else on our team. And I don't feel that, you know, Rob had his cute little press conference, but I don't feel like Rob owned that decision because, you know, he was the proof is in the variety and plethora of storylines about whom to blame. And I would have much rather, frankly, I wish Jeannie had come forward and said, you know whose fault it is? It's mine. But that's never going to happen. So that's where I would start. I would say we are going to become a culture of owning what happens because we are the ones who are empowered to change and make changes to what is and going to happen. And the rest falls into place after that because, you know, one of the oddest things about this whole saga right now is Phil's involvement, because I always felt like Phil's strength was in creating a tribe outside of everything else. Oh,
in the organization, you mean,
right? Everything else, the media, the organization, the fans, the league, the other team.
The front office and so forth.
Oh, no, beyond the front, more than the front office.
Yeah, no.
He created a village that the players all felt safe living in and could do their jobs well in, and they won doing it. And so now for him to be involved in this weird process of like, and this is why I think he's a terrible GM, because you can't run a team like that. You have to build. You have to build cohesion between, or try to. And you have to be good at evaluating talent. And, you know, Phil likes guys who can do fundamental things and often would rather have a team without a dynamic superstar, yet only ever won when he had a dynamic superstar. So the culture of the Lakers feels broken. And this is what we've been talking about, you know, for a while now, I feel like, this whole season. But especially during the offseason, you know, Joe refers to it as like, you know, the confusion or there's no direction or no leadership. You know, the fact that there's an advocation process for, you know, basically, I don't want to say limiting, but like, you know, throwing your weight behind a relationship with one sports agency speaks to the weakness of the culture of the Lakers. To think that the Los Angeles Lakers would need to rely on a sports agency is, to me, mind-boggling. The fact that Quinn Snyder, who has won nothing, is already kind of on record being like, I don't know about that job. That four coaches turned it down before Frank Vogel. And on and on and on and on. That's not the Laker franchise I grew up, you know, watching and rooting for. This is a new thing. And, you know, I don't see, unfortunately, I don't see one question answered solving it. But to your hypothesis, Gerald, I would say the question I would answer is, when we blame somebody, we start at the top and it filters down from there.
So you would say, how do I go ahead and start fixing the organization from the top down first?
Correct. I think that nothing will really truly improve until that happens. And I think it comes, you know, and there, a lot of that comes, shows up on the court. You know, it's, we signed two centers who could barely move because the Lakers have a tradition of a dominant big man in the low post. And we have let dynamic players get away in the name of pursuing a name, because the Lakers are, you know, the shed where superstars go to die. So, you know, if that's the identity, then it is going to take nothing but luck for us to win another championship, because it won't be done through intelligence or through planning or through, you know, having a solid base from which you make decisions from. And that is reflected in, you know, we could go through a long list of, you know, Caruso or Westbrook or, you know, Muscala for Zubats is actually one of my favorite examples of that. Like, why did, what? what?
Well, you could also say Mozgov and Deng, because that, you know, they just got off the Deng contract so many years later.
A plethora of examples. I would say that we need to look in, we are the problem and we need to solve it ourselves. That's, if I was running things, obviously I'm not the problem. I'm just some fan.
You are some fan indeed. Laker Tom, if you were running the franchise and we renamed it the Laker Toms and we have put you in charge of the whole organization,
can we rename it the Laker Toms?
What is the one question you would start first that you would try to answer?
Well, I would make sure that before the franchise did a single thing, that we had a very solid identity and a blueprint of exactly what kind of team we were going to be. Were we going to be a team that played small ball? Were we going to be a team that played tall ball? Or were we going to be a team that could play either? Defense was going to be important, but so was offense. We would need to have a balanced team. I would not be an owner or general manager in favor of a third superstar. Instead, I would want to have a great starting lineup and make sure that the first eight players in the rotation didn't have any minimum salary players in there. I'd make sure that we had certain character requirements that we had for the players that we were going to bring in, that they had to be multi-tool players. They had to be multi-positional defenders. They had to be able to shoot the ball. And I would want to make sure that we could play jumbo big or super small. And I think that once you, you know, and that effort is going to be really important. And so you want a coach who can command and demand effort from players and who will hold everybody accountable, including superstars. And you're going to want superstars who want to be coached. And you're going to want to have players who want to be on a winning team and are willing to make the sacrifices necessary to do those things. And they all got to have the kind of character that they're selfless players, or else it's not going to work. So you start first with an identity, and that's your blueprint. Who do you hire for a coach? You hire a coach who can create that kind of chemistry and that kind of synergy. And then you go and you down the line for the players that you're going to bring in. And yes, you're going to have to make some exceptions. You're going to have some guys who can't play defense, but boy, can they score. And you're going to have some guys who can get played off the floor because they're big men and they can't play all the time. They can't be playing a small ball lineup, but there's a need for them and a place for them on the team. You're going to have some guys who can't shoot threes, but they're dead eyes from mid range. So you've got to have a balance in there, and you've got to be able to play every kind of basketball at every level and against any team that you can come up against, because that's what it comes down to in the end, that you have the most versatile team, the depth to handle the injuries, because they're always going to be part of the game. And everything comes down to having an identity, which is why Jeannie Buss is such a terrible owner for this franchise, because she has no identity other than her Rolodex.
Well, there you go. Wow. All right. There you go indeed. Joe, He's getting fired up here. I want to hear your thoughts. We just turned it over to you. Laker Tom has retired as a winning GM, several championships after taking over for Jamie Sweet, won several championships. You went into early retirement, Jamie. There you go. Yes, you wanted to spend more time with the family. Laker Tom took over, got several championships, turned it over to Joe. Seeing how the situation is now for the team, as of now, let's say you took over in this current situation, what is the first question you would try to answer?
I'm gonna bring a little bit of contrast. Is it Masai in Toronto?
Masai, sorry.
So Masai, you saw the questions about the Lakers' interest in Nurse, and you saw his
dreaming answer,
his response. That's real. That's someone who's real. I like real people. When you listen to Rob Pelinka, and this is before all this, by the way, this is from when I first came on, everything is a good and everything is nice and everything is just PC and by the book, you know? What happens when you're like that is there'll eventually be a level of fakeness that starts to materialize. And then when things go bad, you're not going to be able to weasel your way out of it without looking like a jackass. Jeannie is, she won the genetic lottery. Her dad is Dr. Jerry Buss, a visionary, a PhD in chemistry, and, you know, came from nothing to something. And again, I'm not trying to dog on Jeannie in that she's fortunate to have been born in that family. But how can you build something if you've never had to really build anything? You've always had it, you know? And being in charge, oh man, when you're an owner of a business, you have to be about it from every angle, every day. There's a reason why Elon Musk, Warren Buffett, Bill Gates, all these guys are in it 80 hours a week still. It's not about the money, right? It's what they want to do. It's who they are. It's how they're wired. If you are an owner of the LA Lakers and you're not wired for it, this is the result. Rob Pelinka was an agent for, 25 years? Is he really wired to go to the gym and watch John Doe basketball guy at some prominent high school where, wow, what's going on? Jerry West did it. Matter of fact, Jerry West changed NBA history, Laker history, because of that. He was at a gym at a time that wasn't normal to pick a guard to come straight from the high school ranks to the NBA, but he recognized it. And you would think, even if Jerry's sitting there saying things that are derogatory, I don't care what Jerry West says about the Lakers, probably true anyways, Jerry West built your whole legacy, especially in the last 30 years. You give that man whatever he wants. You bring that man back, okay? I love Jerry West more because of the show. I know he's mad about it. I love Jerry West. I love Michael Jordan more because of these shows. And maybe I'll get lucky one day and I'll tell them both. Michael, that's an easy one. But Jerry seems to be kind of really offended by what's been going on. But if I am hired, or let's say, I wouldn't be hired actually. Let's say I'm sitting in a room and they're sitting there going, Joe, we want to hire you as general manager. What is it going to take for you to accept our offer? First and foremost will be, all right, get out of my way and do my job. I don't want to hear about Linda. I don't want to hear about your third cousin and what they think. I don't want to hear about Jim Buss's bartender, Chaz. I don't want to hear about anything, okay? The first meeting I have, if they offered me the job and they agreed that they'd leave me alone to do my job, is I would call LeBron and only LeBron into my office and say, what do you want to do? This team hinges on you and AD, but you're the guy that's here. You're the guy that's there. You're the guy that's playing all the time. What do you want? You want to feel good, or do you want to feel a little uncomfortable and go win? Because winning is uncomfortable. It's always uncomfortable. I mean, imagine we're fans, and there were times where I'm dreading when we're down 2-1 in a second round series, right? You're like sitting there going, if we lose this game, we're down 3-1. You don't even want to watch the game sometimes. And then they're up 10 points in the second quarter. You're like, is this game ever going to end? You're uncomfortable. But what makes us fans and what makes us keep coming back is those six times in the last 22 years where in the end it was euphoria. But
or you could also say it's one time in the last 11 years.
I'm not going to talk about this again. we were railroaded because we had that funk because we were railroaded. But
we should have a drinking game every time Joe mentions the Chris Paul.
No. I will never get off it. Okay, we were railroaded, and I'm not gonna pull that one title in 11 years. Bull crap, and. We
still need the stats.
The league could not handle Lakers winning for some weird reason. And David Stern, being the weasel that he was, he changed the rules every time the Lakers were winning. He was always all up in our business. He implemented the zone because of Shaq after the three-peat. He had two lockouts. Look, David Stern was great from 84 to 98. 98 and beyond, he was a disaster. That's why there's a shelf life. That's why there's times for people. You know, I really truly believe that. Look at Daniel Day-Lewis. Daniel Day-Lewis retired from acting. He had a lot left. But you know what? He's sitting there going, guys, I've won 3 Oscars. I've been acting for 35 years. What else am I going to do other than, what, go get a paycheck? No, I'm going to go back to Scotland or England or wherever you are. I'm going to go make shoes. Okay? And that's it. I've done it. To me, we just talked about this. We've come close. We've done what you're supposed to do in media, right? We started with a discussion and we're sort of ending with it, right? Guys like Stephen A. Smith, guys like Jim Rome, guys like Colin Howard, they're played out. It's over. Like, there's no suspense anymore. I'm not interested in listening to the same BS. And then on top of that, if you're just going to hire someone because of a demographic on top of all that, now it's like, well, how do we know these people are really talented to do this? And it makes sense because that's kind of what we do. That's what they did in L.A. They hired Rob off reputation. He knew Kobe. Okay. Genie is Genie. Genie knows Linda. Genie knows Linda because of Kurt. It's like, can we just hire talent, please? You come off as some... Oh, you're that guy sitting in his thing, doesn't want anything to change. No, I'm not doing that. I want talent running things. I don't care what you look like, where you are, or what you do, or who you know. I want talent. If you happen to know them and you trust them and they have the talent, cool. But if they don't have the talent and they're just there because of nepotism, then this is the result. Talent, people, talent. I want talented people. Talent is very hard to find. It is very hard. I am a business owner and I know it. Okay? I know it. It is hard to find. Why? Because there's not a lot of people that put in the work and there's not a lot of people that are mentally focused day in and day out. It's just not. They have relationship issues or they can't handle their kids or their friends are scumbags and all this real world garbage crap. So we're here. You're asking me if I was running this thing, get the F out of my way. Let me run this. If I stink, fire me. But at least we'll have an identity. At least we'll have an identity. At least I'll have things put in place. Can we do this? Can we do that? No, you can't do that. Okay, well, I tried, guys. You wouldn't let me do it. But if you did let me do it, Let's see what the results are.
It's so funny because if Joe actually led the Lakers to a championship as they were accepting the Larry O'Brien trophy, he would make sure he would ask for two simply because of the fact that the Lakers got railroaded on that Chris Paul.
No, trade. What I would do is I'd do what Ricky Henderson did when he broke Lou Brock's stolen base record. I am greatest.
Oh,
you guys don't remember that, do you?
I do. That's Ricky.
I know you do. I know G does.
Yeah, it's Ricky Henderson.
Laker Tom doesn't remember, though.
Yeah. Just Ricky Henderson played for the Yankees.
I was going to say. I think
Ricky gets to talk
dozens of times for the A's in person.
I used to hear stories about people when Ricky would talk to people just in the locker room. He'd talk in first person. You know, Ricky don't go to the shower.
Well, there never will
Ricky
be.
Ricky don't go to the parking lot at night.
Well, there never will be, I think, somebody that's going to top the single season record for stolen bases because
no one's going to break that record because baseball's completely changed, and I think we're never going to see another 300 game winner in baseball.
Could be a possibility. At least the innings. I think the innings because they shortened down the innings as well. So I think that could be another. Or strikeouts. Anything relating to longevity as far as it's concerned because they love to go
the
ahead.
The integrity of the game has been ruined forever by the ghost runner.
Yeah.
Come on.
Well, I mean, starting pitchers these days, they don't usually get past the fifth inning. So that's right there. That's something that's.
But ghost runners, really.
Yeah, I know. But I do like the fact that now the DH is there. I don't like the pitcher hitting. Never liked the pitcher hitting. Thought that was.
What's next? The teams will have automatic free throw shooters?
Well, maybe we should try that from right
there. I thought they got rid of it. And then all of a sudden I saw it. What? Did they change their mind after they ended the lockout?
Well, no, those were the details that had to be hammered out post-agreement.
Yeah. At least they're going to get rid of the switch. That's going to be good. You know,
I'll believe it when I see it. But even that is dumb. Like, why stop the manager from managing? You want to throw all the infielders on 1-7? Learn how to bunt to the left side then. Like, for the love
of God. They can't. They can't, Jamie. Because...
No, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. The fundamental skill base.
Nobody wants to play that kind of baseball anymore, Jamie, because nobody comes to watch it.
You can't control changes.
You're trying to save baseball.
I go to watch that stuff.
I mean, otherwise, the only place you're going to go be able to see it'll probably
the fans be love the long ball
in the middle of the country, home runs in the middle of a cornfield,
home runs, game three pointers.
Yes, absolutely. But if I was running the team, I would start with one question, which is the reason why I actually pointed this out for you guys as far as the topic for today, and that is. I really seriously thought, you know, sit down in the office for a while and think about this clearly and ask myself, is having a team with LeBron James and Anthony Davis still going to get me a championship? If I try to build around it with whatever limited resources I can down the line, can I go ahead and still build a championship team around LeBron James and Anthony Davis?
That's the wrong question.
No, that's the right question. Better that's question the question I would ask.
The question you should have asked is, do I have a better chance of winning a championship in the next 2 years?
No, that's the question I would ask myself is, do I have a chance of winning a championship?
Yeah, you could get an answer. LeBron could be no, but it could still give you the best chance.
Again, I'm answering it for myself. You're answering it for yourself. You had your own question asked. I'm asking myself my own question. So that's the first question I'm asking is, do I think that LeBron James.
I was just trying to improve your answer. That's all.
Well, that's the question I'm going to
get rid of.
Do I think I can win a championship with LeBron James and Anthony Davis?
No, the first question, Gerald. The first question you're going to ask is, why is my office next to Laker Tom's?
He's retired. He already won his championships.
He's right. I'm retired.
Yes, he just retired with his several championships, putting us well past the Los Angeles, the Boston Celtics. But I will just say again, if the question is,
I get to talk to Jeannie from now on, though, and give her ideas?
Well, you get to talk to the Rambi. I'm going to give you the Rambi instead.
Oh, no.
Stop it, please.
Can I at least talk to Linda?
That's all on you. Maybe Phil will come from
Montana. We talk about the Rambis people more than we talk about anybody else.
That's scary.
Is this real?
Well, again, let me close out by saying this. I will say that would be my question I would ask. Do I think I can win a championship with LeBron and AD?
Gerald,
then there's some trades you need to do ASAP. That's simple as that. If there's
Gerald,
not,
she's going to trade him.
Gerald, do you think
sign an extension? She's not going to trade him.
No, yeah. She'll let him walk. He'll walk.
Yeah, she said either which way. So
there's always the midseason deadline, Jamie.
Well, that's what we're talking about for Westbrook. He may last until the
if they wait till the deadline, you can kiss any chance of winning a championship next
year. Tom, I've watched back to back draft or trade deadline day specials on Laker Fast Break.
Those were exciting. Those are exciting podcasts.
Oh my God,
Gerald and I watching grass grow.
That's right.
Well, if you're looking at it statistically, you kind of have to wonder about keeping those two there. Yeah, well, after, their health.
Not Blake will not be a virgin this year.
Their health and their age. I'm just putting it out there. I'm not saying I would trade them. I'm not saying I wouldn't trade them. I'm just saying that's the question I would have to ask.
You don't trade them. That's stupid because your best shot at winning the championship the next 2 years is to keep them.
But the franchise going forward,
as low as it may be, that's your best.
As low it may be. Okay, did you set yourself as low as it may be?
Well, you want the truth, but that's the point I was trying to make. That as poor as your shot may be with the two of them, without them, your shot is really almost impossible.
But what if you were to trade and get assets back that could seriously improve your team to put them in a better place going forward?
There's a bunch of theoretical trades that somebody might make, but when you get down to it, the Lakers aren't going to do that because the odds of that turning out to be something that gives you a better chance to win.
But
that's giving up.
The question is for us. If we were running the Lakers.
The Lakers aren't going to do it. It's like dreaming of a new ownership.
I think
Genie Bus is not going to sell the Lakers, man.
The question was if we were running the Lakers, not the Lakers
voting about it.
It ain't going to happen. I didn't say what happened. I said if I was running the Lakers, I would ask myself that question. So I'm going to just leave it at that. Yeah, I know. Tell me about it. But before we head on out, there is HBO's Winning Time ended season one plus the NBA playoffs. So we'll hit up HBO's Winning Time. Another great season in the books for another television show. Of course, there's season two along the way that's coming up. It's already been renewed. HBO's Winning Time has garnered its share of controversy over the course of the past 10 episodes, concluded earlier this evening with what we all know, with the Lakers winning the 1980 championship, Magic Johnson getting the MVP, supposedly during the course of the show, stealing it away from Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Plus, you also have Spencer Haywood plotting to kill the Lakers. So what's truth and what's fiction in this? Well, when it concerns Haywood, it actually wasn't.
Who cares?
He actually did or was contemplating in a coke-induced rage about his being let go by Paul Westhead. He was inquiring about cutting the brakes off of Paul Westhead's car. So he did admit to that in a book that he wrote, and that Westhead did forgive him down the line when he was in recovery because Haywood has become, since his retirement, become a major advocate against drug use. So, that was something that is actually kind of true as far as at least the coach is concerned. But no, he did not plot to kill the entire Lakers team, as what you saw in tonight's last episode. Also, as well, when it concerns the MVP award, we all know that coming into it, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was leading the numbers as far as overall doing the best. But with Magic Johnson getting that excellent last game where Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was not in the game because he was home because he had sprained his ankle the previous game, Magic Johnson had that terrific performance, and the people responsible for making the vote for the MVP decided on making him the MVP for the series after that performance, which I think was justified. So Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, I think, paid a lot of respect to him during that time from what I remember. And it did not turn out exactly as the way it did. But that leads me into the question for tonight is season one is in the books. It's created a share of controversy. Joe, I'll start with you. Your overall thoughts on season one? I mean, it turned into something that you enjoyed really to start off with. Then it seemed to go off on the rails at times for you. But how did it end up for season one for you with Winning Time?
After the show, I'm going to watch number 10. But the ending of 9 was goofy. He went to his drug dealer and said, I want to air the Lakers. I'm like, really? Is this real?
Well, he, like I said, he was plotting to kill, or at least he was in the planning stages. He actually talked to his mom that talked him out of it.
I understand building the drama, but this is Fast and the Furious suspension of disbelief now. People flying in the air 100 miles an hour and falling in a window and not having a scratch on them. You don't need to do that. You know, if you want to say Spencer Haywood was going to go slash his brakes, okay, not go to his dope dealer and go, hey, what kind of guns do you have? Oh, I got bazookas and I got this and I got that. He's like, anything that works. I'm like, come on, give me a break. Okay. I my enjoyment of it is because I think it's got a nice balance of really good talent and the fact that it's a Laker themed show, which that's my team. And then you remember certain things that you've read in the past that are now put on film. Those are the fun parts. And then listening to John C. Reilly doing his thing and, you know, Sally Field and how that all played out. I thought that was nice. And I like Jeannie. I like the girl that plays Jeannie. I don't know why. I think just think she's really good. I'm satisfied. I really only watched two shows, that one and Better Call Saul. And those are, you know, I don't really consider Better Call Saul a new show. It's basically a spinoff of Breaking Bad. So Winning Time is really the first show I've started watching that was episodic since Breaking Bad stopped showing. And I like knowing and being entertained about my team. I think that's kind of where I'm at on that right now. As soon as we're done here, I'm going to go watch number 10, and then I'll probably be able to give you a better assessment of the overall quality of the first 10 episodes, and then hopefully they can get the next batch out quick, because I'm looking forward to seeing it, and I can't wait for the three-peat one. That's what I can't wait for. I want to see who's going to play Kobe, who's going to play Shaq.
But that's like several seasons down the line.
And that's how they get you. You know, that's how they get you. They wet your beak, and then all of a sudden you're like, wait a minute, you're going to talk about – what are you going to talk about Citadel 3 and Cedric Sabalas Lakers? Are they going to do a show for them? I mean, Cedric was good at drama. I mean, he decided one day to get up during game day and go,
Havasu.
I feel like I want to go to Lake Havasu. And then what you want to, and then how that plays in is, if he doesn't go to Lake Havasu, we don't get Robert Horry. We don't get Robert Horry. We don't win in 2002. Imagine connecting the dots and doing all that. I'm sure obsessed Laker fans know that scenario, but the general Laker fan or the general audience, they don't know squat about that stuff. That'd be fun. Watching the actor who plays Robert Horry throw a towel in Danny Ainge's face. I mean, come on. I would never condone a player to ever do anything like that to a coach, except if he's a Celtic.
That's right. Especially Danny Ainge.
And especially Danny Ainge, because we've all wanted to kick that guy in the face.
Well, remember, he bit Tree Rollins.
Tree Rollins is a nutcase. I mean, that guy was nuts. Robert Horry isn't nuts. He's just temperamental, and he's kind of into what he is. But Danny Ainge, probably God knows what he said to him that just, what do you know, bud? Now I'm going to Lakers.
Okay, well, let us know your final thoughts, hopefully on the Wednesday show.
I'll call you at 1 a.m. tonight and let you know.
I'm sure you will. I'll be up editing, so no problem on that. Yep, I'll be up. I got two shows to edit. But, Jamie, did you get a chance to see any of Winning Time? Did you get it? Nope. Is it because you didn't want to? Is it because you
couldn't? No, I've got the whole season on DVR. It's coming.
All right. Okay. Because I want to hear your thoughts on that, man.
You want to talk about Moon Knight?
I shared my thoughts this weekend on Moon Knight. I think that's got a performance right there. Like for instance, Oscar Isaac and John C. Reilly both did their great jobs as far as portraying. In the case of Oscar Isaac, multiple characters. In case of John C. Reilly, did a great job playing Jerry Buss. I think it stands out. You know, there's some other issues I have. Again,
I love John C. Reilly. John C. Reilly is one of the great actors of this generation and of our time.
Oh, there you go. But I still think the way they portrayed Jason Segel, portrayed Paul Westhead, still have an issue with that. Jerry West, you know, again, they made it out to be too much of a lampooning job there.
You know, you can't begrudge an actor their choices. They got a job to do too, man.
They're being paid. I'm not begrudging the actor. I'm begrudging the people who wrote the actor that material. So
sure. Yeah, you don't know. I mean, you know, that'll have to come out on the post series documentary where it's like, was that your choice or was that something that just happened on set, like in the moment? You know, we'll find that out. We'll find all that out later.
And I also wanted to talk with Joe when he was mentioning Fast and Furious. And it's funny because F10, Justin Lin walked off the set and left after an argument with Vin Diesel. What could it be about? I mean, what could be about as far as plot? What could have been so crazy in regards to the plot?
It's too much, guys. There's a shelf life.
They've been into space, for God's sakes. Where could you go? It's about cars crashing, you know, good-looking girls, some hip-hop music at the end.
I can see that. I can go anywhere I want to go see that. I don't want to see it in a theater anymore.
I've never seen a single
Money's not everything.
But I'm wondering what caused Justin Lin to go. I mean, it must have been
exactly. See, Justin Lin has principles. He got tired. He's like, look, I'm done. I'm done with this. There's a spot. Look, when you're in that industry and you're as popular as he is, you've got other options. Why do you have to go? Money is not everything. I've had no money and I've had money. Trust me when I say this. When you compromise your principles for money, you will be a miserable human being. You'll turn into Vin Diesel fighting LaRock, fighting the director. Why? Because he's entitled. You get entitled. You get relaxed. You get set in your ways when you're doing the same thing over and over again.
But Justin Lin has directed several Fast and Furious movies, and none of them have been anything resembling a well-made movie.
Because Justin Lin has done a great job in the shots. He's just the director.
They don't want to make good movies.
Yeah, they're not. You think cars crashing?
You know, the whole music thing, and yeah, that's it. That's all they want.
Yeah, no, it's
they're glorified MTV videos, man.
It's a formula. It works.
You remember Tropic Thunder? You remember Tropic Thunder? You remember the beginning of Tropic Thunder, one of the greatest opening scenes in movie history? Where they're, what was it, Tuck Speedman in, you know, Scorched Earth, eight?
One of the best Tom Cruise performances of all time.
One of the best performances in the history of 100 actors on that show.
Tom Cruise was sensational.
Everyone was amazing. Okay, so that Scorched, that was it. That's
all right.
That's what they are. They've become this parody of themselves, and people. I know they keep watching it. That's the thing is, if the audience is going to keep paying money to see it, then go see it. But I'm sorry, I checked out, guys. I can't watch that crap anymore.
Yeah, I never watched a single Fast and Furious movie, and I probably never will.
You've seen one, you've seen them all, and I'll leave it at that.
Transformers was another one.
Family, I live my life 1/4 mile at a time. But later, Tom,
isn't that the same with the Friday the 13th?
Now I'm James Bond, and I'm in Brazil, and
Later, Tom, you have been again. You actually took the time to watch this. Like Joe, you never really watched episodic viewing anymore. You took the time to go ahead and invest yourself in this series. I am definitely want to hear your final thoughts as the series closed out its first season. Hopefully the first of many, because I do want to support something relating to the Lakers, even though the Lakers themselves don't want to support it. But I want to hear your thoughts on HBO's Winning Time season one.
Well, you know, I have a whole range of thoughts on it because, as you said, this is the first time, just like Joe, it's the first time I've really watched any episodic TV at all. I mean, I never watched Breaking Bad or any TV shows. I refused to do it out of principle. So I compromised that principle just for you, Gerald.
Well, thank you.
And I never watched the show, and I happen to love the show. I will tell you one thing I won't do is that I'm not going to watch every week like these fools want you to. I cannot stand that whole thing. Not the least of which is that I have to kind of remember which episode I'm on just to make sure that they don't resume me. I've had several instances where I get resumed two or three episodes ahead. You know, and I've got to, they go through the review at the start of the show and I see, well, I didn't miss, I missed all of that. So it's really bothers me. I'm only going to binge watch this stuff going forward. Okay.
Okay.
But you know, it's got me watching three or four other things, outer range. And I've watched all of the Bosch stuff and so forth. So it's an interesting thing. Now, as to the show itself, you know, I saw a photo in Twitter. It was a black and white photo of Magic Johnson and Dr. Buss that first year sitting at a table talking. And I swear to God, they look so much like John C. Reilly and Quincy Isaiah that, you know, I had to really look twice and say, wait a minute, did they just recreate that shot or was this an original shot? The casting was so good in this show. And I remember them saying when they were discussing it, that a big part of it not only was to make sure that infectious smile and that wry sort of grin that Jerry Buss had, that they could be replicated by the actors that they put into those positions. And man, I tell you, there are times when I watch that show where I'm just amazed. John C. Reilly could be Jerry West. I mean, it could be Jerry Buss and
John C. Reilly in charge.
He's, you know, it's just terrific. The other thing, though, that I loved is that this is the first time where we really got to see a lot of basketball action by the players themselves. And you got to see Solomon Hughes playing on the court, like throwing the skylooks up and so forth and making plays. And you got to see Quincy dribbling down the ball and twirling and making plays. And you could really start to understand how well that was done compared to a lot of other sports movies where you've seen big name stars. You know, I can remember movies with Paul Newman boxing, for example, and not even knowing how to hit somebody and players, baseball players who couldn't even swing the bat, you know, and definitely basketball players who couldn't play basketball. So I thought the scenes and the layouts of that were all real well done. And then last but not least, I've always contended during the entire show that in the end, the portrayals of certain characters are all going to balance out. And you're going to see that, yeah, well, these guys are human. They end up as heroes, you know? I mean, the way that Kareem handled himself through that whole situation, the way that Magic handled himself, the way that Riley, or the way that Pat Riley and Jack McKinney and the way they solved all of those things. And I love the fact that McKinney, I'd like to know whether that was really a true thing, that he had this, that he'd already planned out what to do if Kareem couldn't play, you know, and he actually was going to have Magic at center. It's kind of funny. One of the things that I don't know if anybody else had this. Every so often when I go back and look at the Lakers' histories, things start to merge together. And there was a good portion I started to tell my wife how this thing was going to end. And I realized that, you know what, I've been imagining in the entire time I've watched the show, the wrong ending. Because what I call it, what I pulled out of my mind and my memory as an older man was the skyhook that Magic made to win a championship. And I somehow put that idea when I got that mixed up with the Philadelphia game where he actually replaced Magic. And then I remembered all, of course, that skyhook that Magic put in. He also could have thrown a lob pass to Kareem who would have dunked the ball. But it's kind of interesting that in the juxtaposition of all of these championship moments, because like Joe was saying, I had forgotten how a lot of this stuff went down, you know, and getting, I think Gerald's done a great job of recounting, where the reality was exaggerated in order for the entertainment factors and so forth. But I thought all of the guys came off as, you know, the three guys who were doing the coaching, they all came off as really well. I thought the players came off really well, Hey, you know, the reason I love the series, though, is the entertainment. And it is
making characters out of Jerry Buss and out of Jerry West was definitely a big part of how this whole thing could really work. But I give them, you know, they get 5 stars from nine. I'm going to binge next time. So, you know, maybe you'll break me down and I'll have to watch that one series in an episodic fashion. But I really dislike that because there's like 3 or 4 series that I am watching now and I've got to stop them all just because I cannot deal with, you know, I can't remember which episode I'm on.
It's so funny, though. It's so funny how all of us are complaining about episodic television. And for most of our lives, on everybody on this show, what has it been for us?
Episodic
television.
Yeah, but I never watched that stuff. You know, I never watched the TV shows when they were on free networks. I refused. I only watched movies and sports.
Okay. I'm just saying what life has been like for us for most of our lives.
I didn't watch
until the last decade.
Friday nights. Yeah.
It wasn't until Netflix came along that binging was really a thing.
Listen, Gerald, you're watching the wrong TV. You're watching the wrong TV.
Okay, fair enough. As someone who has several streaming outlets. Yeah, okay. All right. We'll be back with more of the Lakers Fast Break Podcast. Hey, Lakers fans. Looking for the best place to go for up-to-date news, information, original videos, articles, podcasts, opinion pieces, and discussions about the Los Angeles Lakers? Well, look no further than LakerHolics.com. With a legion of followers always there talking about everything Lakers and the NBA, there's no better place to go to share your fandom as the team heads toward another championship run. So stop by and be part of the conversation today at LakerHolics.com. But before we head on out, if you have any questions or thoughts or comments on Winning Time, we'd love to hear it. Love your feedback on it. Go ahead and let us know, Lakers Fast Break, or in the comments in the YouTube channel. I'll tell you what, you guys have been doing an amazing job out there. Ox1947 and I, Joe Soro, has been doing a great job answering your comments. You guys have been just laying out a whole bunch of comments, your thoughts on the organization and so much more. So if you want to share your thoughts on the Lakers or Winning Time, please let us know right there or at Lakers Fast Break on Twitter. But before heading out, an NBA playoffs update because there is still games going on. It's been very interesting to see. We've got some ties going around right now. Some teams that are going back to their home arenas a little bit concerned. One is in Phoenix and one is in Miami, which thought they had both of them, the easy things going on when they headed into the opposing arenas. But, well, 2 games later, total different story, plus what's going on as well in Golden State and also just going on as well in Milwaukee. So before we head on out, guys, wanted to go ahead and recap real quick on Sunday night. What we have is right now 2-2 is Miami and Philadelphia, with Philadelphia with the game tonight, where James Harden actually for once looked like James Harden and helped out Joel Embiid and the crew to go ahead with a victory tonight. So they're tied heading back to Miami. Right earlier today, they had a good game going on with Dallas and Phoenix. Dallas has looked a lot better than when they did in Phoenix. Fancy that, the home cooking there, with even though that Luka had a terrible game by his standards, the rest of the team picked him up and led to a comfortable victory. So they're 2-2 headed to Phoenix. Tomorrow night's games will include Milwaukee, which has a 2-1 game lead right now over a very, very, very concerned Boston Celtic team, but they still got a good chance as long as they continue to play defense on Giannis. And you never know, the loss of Chris Middleton, when will that be a factor if it isn't already? And then you have as well in the nightcap, you have in San Francisco, you have the Golden State Warriors with a 2-1 games lead in a very hotly contested in more ways than one matchup against Memphis, with a lot of people asking or, you know, trying to go ahead and accuse each other of dirty play after what we saw now with it's been nasty, it's been chippy. I kind of like it. It's playoff basketball right there for you. We saw the unfortunate injury though for Gary Payton II, got followed up by a, well, just I guess a lot of people are talking about Jordan Poole, maybe possibly tweaking the knee of John Morant, who most likely will not be in game four. So, Joe, I'm going to hit you up first on this. Which series has been entertaining, or have they all been entertaining to you so far?
Well, you know, series don't really become a series until the road team wins. Mm-hmm. Now, that's different. And the Golden State-Memphis game is a little bit of a nostalgic series where you have a bunch of chatter, which I'm surprised the NBA hasn't suspended the whole team for chattering. I'd like to see more of that. I'd like to see more of people accusing the other guy of trying to take people's heads off, because that's, to me, what playoff basketball is all about. And the Philly-Miami series,
got interesting, didn't it?
If they beat Miami in game five, they might close it out in six. They might.
Well, the odds. Well, let me just say this. I'll let you continue. The game five winner, just to let you know, on series that are tied, the game five winner statistically are like, what, 60 to 70% as far as winning the series. So that usually gives them a big advantage going forward.
And Miami is, you know, it suffers from, you know, Jimmy Butler is a star, but he's
played
like
one tonight.
Yeah, he's just, I don't know. He's not the Joel Embiid star, or even to some degree James Harden, even when he was winning NBA.
Well, he doesn't get the foul calls that those two get.
I guess he could. You could go that route too.
So what you're saying is, when he gets 38 like he did tonight, it's not the same as if Joel Embiid gets 38.
No. It's weird how basketball. It's weird how certain players will dominate a game, and it's typically not. They could score the same amount of points, and it's a completely different game. LeBron James averaged 30 points a game this year, and like Magic before him, when they average too many points, it actually is a detriment to the team in terms of winning, because their games are focused more on distribution and getting everybody involved. So Jimmy Butler is scoring those numbers because there's no one else on his team that can do it. There's been talk about Tyler Hero needs to show up in another level to have a chance at going further in the playoffs. Well, folks, Tyler Hero is a sixth man. He is not a superstar. He is a star. He's not a superstar. He's not a 1-1A on a title team. So it's not a surprise that if James Harden decides that he wants to play instead of go to strip clubs, and then, of course, if Joel Embiid is healthy, it's very likely that those guys are going to end up winning the series. The Dallas-Phoenix series, my head tells me that Dallas took two at home, but if Phoenix wins game five, I think they'll close it out in Dallas. But I don't know if Chris Paul is starting to feel the pressure. It just seems like anytime this happens, Chris Paul can't seem to close the door. Those 2-0 leads are detriment to him, it seems like. Kind of like Doc Rivers when he's up 3-1. However,
you can't even blame it on Scott Foster.
Isn't that what society is all about? It's always about blaming the other guy, right?
Or the ref.
Blame the refs. Everything that happens to you is bro code has been broken. That guy, out of all the people to say that, Steve Kerr, you have a guy who's a nut banger on the court, and you're talking about bro code. If there was ever a bro code, it's not hitting your bro in the nuts. That's the ultimate bro code. So I just think people are so into their own. If you wait long enough, you will see selfishness. It doesn't matter who it is. Those people, anybody, doesn't matter who it is. You can sit there and listen to them yap. Well, I do this and I do that. We're all about community. We're all about this. But then when the pressure hits, just one little comment will reveal who they really are. Now, this is sports. I'm not talking about anything on sports here. It'd be an easier response to say, We got unlucky. He went for his head. He took it off. He broke his arm. We'll see what happens next. But no, we got to go, yeah, he broke bro code. And now Poole is doing what he did and all this. And I'm like, just be transparent. Just say something. What, are you worried about getting fined? Don't they make like $80 million a year? What are you worried about? What, a $10,000 fine? Hey, it's making the sport exciting. The ratings are up. I kept hearing about how LeBron's not in it. We don't know if the ratings are going to go up. Matter of fact, it's actually, I think the last few years, the ratings have gone up when LeBron has been bounced out of the playoffs. So, interesting narrative there. But we could see something happening within the next few years where the audience finally gets to the point in the NBA where we don't really win the championship. That never happens. That's very rare. It's usually it's going to be this team or that team, and it usually happens. We don't know. I mean, if Dallas beats Phoenix, could they go to the finals? And how sick are we going to be from that if Jason Kidd wins the title with Dallas?
It's parody.
And Jared Dudley.
Yeah. I won't stop
with the Jared Dudley stuff.
I won't be. Oh, God.
It's the honor of B. Garcia.
Please, enough already with this Jared Dudley crap.
You're talking to the wrong group of guys. You are talking to Laker Tom is the leader of the Jared Dudley fan club.
Enough. I'm not a fan of Jared Dudley. I don't like him, but I'm not a fan
either. Neither am I. Please. Jamie, your thoughts on this? Do you think it was a dirty play by Jordan Poole? I mean, from the replay, it kind of looks like it, but I'm not 100% sure. It kind of looks like he was taking his knee.
I watched the replay a few times, and I didn't even really see.
With his left hand.
It was fast.
He's going for the ball. I mean, it's the same. I mean, I thought that the takedown that Brooks did of Gary Payton.
That was dirty.
That was egregious, and he deserved to get ejected. He got ejected. He definitely probably deserved
totally
to get suspended.
Dangerous play.
I mean, let's also be honest. If he doesn't break his arm, Brooks doesn't get suspended.
Right.
And that's the double standard of the NBA itself. And
I still like Bynum on that Hobbit in Dallas back in the day. That was my favorite.
Right.
shot.
The greatest.
JJ Barea.
I mean, it's the playoffs.
People I like violence.
People are going to play hard. Let them play hard. You know, like the regular season is fraught with games of like turning it on in the last 7 minutes of the game where like run back and forth, shoot a three here, drive to the rim there. And it just is kind of tedious that when the playoffs finally do roll around, suddenly everybody gets like, oh my God, it all just gets like blown way out of proportion. So, I'm with you. Let him play hard. It's, you know, did Brooks, you know, go a little above the line? And I mean, but completely accurate statement of all the people to be talking about any kind of code whatsoever. Steve Kerr really ought to just sit on his mouth and stop yapping.
And he does. That's what he does. He's always been like that. It's,
well, and that's a Phil Jackson. That's a Phil Jackson
thing. No, yeah. Phil Jackson did it in a way where he would say things like, "Yeah, he did it in a snide way where you're just laughing your butt off." Like,
right.
When he said about what did he say? He said something about what was a broke back moment, like something like that. And then he apologized to horses in his apology. I was dying, man. I was laughing my butt off.
That's why you left Phil. But I mean, listen. The NBA has if you want to talk about unwritten rules, there's an unwritten rule of the champs are the champs until somebody beats them. And honestly, I don't see anybody that looks like they can stop Giannis. So that's kind of where this whole narrative begins and ends for me. I don't see any team that can take Giannis when he is engaged and focused and energetic out of his game. And that's going to decide the NBA finals this year is who stops Giannis. I don't think it's going to be Boston. I don't think it'll be Miami or Philly because they will just abuse James Harden on defense all game long, every game. And James will have to go to the strip club to get his head right. and that and he won't be able to drop no 30 points. So could Phoenix beat Giannis? They couldn't last season, so I don't see why that would change this season. And I don't think Dallas is going to get out of this round because the home team is going to win every game. It'll probably go seven, but I kind of have the home team winning every game in this series. So, you know, it's who's going to stop Antetokounmpo? And the answer is only Giannis at this point. There's nobody who can compete with him athletically. And he's got skills now. He's done a fantastic job and does not, I think, get enough recognition, even though he does get recognition, for adding skills to his game every single summer, every single year, always. And that's impressive to me.
That's impressive to me as well. I think he's playing at a great level. And even without Chris Middleton, it's going to be hard to stop them four times in a series. But Laker Tom, I mean, any last thoughts on the series? Any series you want to touch on?
I tend to agree with Jamie in that I like the Bucks. They're going to be hard to beat. And I think what's most impressive to me is that Giannis finally realizes that he is the biggest and baddest dude in the league. And the Celtics brought that out of him. You know, give it to the Celtics because they punched and grabbed and yanked and snagged him every time they could. And he finally said, enough of that stuff, man. I'm just going to run through you guys. It's been one of the most physical playoff series that I've ever seen. And frankly, all of the playoffs have reminded me a great deal that physicality is really important. And I think there's a lesson the Lakers should take to heart from watching what's going on now, which is not only do they need to get bigger, but I think they need to get bigger both at small forward and at center. I think they need to have us. I don't think Anthony Davis at center is the answer when I look at the teams that are out there and the players that they're going to be facing. And I look at the injury concerns with AD and so forth. So the series that most intrigues me, though, is Luka Doncic and the Mavs. Because I saw something in those two games in that I hadn't seen Phoenix fall to. And that is they basically, Luka really took over that end of that game and totally controlled it. And he controlled the entire game all the way. Even though he had a supposedly subpar game, he passed the ball to the right person over and over and made the big plays. And every time he went down, he and that other point guard that they've got, the left-handed kid.
Brunson is
going to get a huge payday this summer, man. You know, he and Luka make it almost. There was like four straight plays in the last 3 minutes of the game where the two of them took their man right down into the middle of the key and made easy shots on him. And it was just quickness and smarts over the defense in this particular situation. So I'm not 100% sure that Phoenix is going to get out. And I do think Phoenix is the only team that could give just because of they've got a big center who can play. I think they're the one team that can give Milwaukee a real battle in the finals. So, but we'll see. I think the Mavs could theoretically. There's a point in time when Luka Doncic will be so good, and the addition of Brunson, having the shooters shoot the way that they've been shooting, there's a chance that they can upset. But you know, home team hasn't lost yet in those series.
Like you said, first team who wins on the road. There you go. Yep. But if you have any thoughts on the NBA playoffs, we'd love to hear it either in the comments below on Facebook or YouTube, or also as well at Lakers Fast Break, or go to the great places to go for conversation on the Lakers and the NBA. That is our good friends at LakersBall.com. And of course, the great articles that are available today at LakerHolics.com. Well, guys, we had so much to talk about, so much to argue over, so much to speculate on, and so much to talk about if we were the GMs running the Lakers franchise. So great conversation indeed. Thank you so much again for all the support you provide us. It is truly great to see all the new subscribers and also people who like the Facebook page and the new subscribers for YouTube. So cannot thank you enough for doing so. But check us out. We're still going twice a week. So we will go ahead and let you know that we're going to record on Wednesday night for those on Facebook. It'll be posted late Wednesday night on YouTube and then go everywhere worldwide on podcast outlets on Thursday morning. So hopefully you get a chance to check us out for our next episode. I'm sure there's more Lakers news on the way. But for Laker Tom, Joe Sorrell, Jamie Sweet, it's Gerald Glassford. Thank you for watching and listening. We'll see you next time right here at the Lakers Fast Break Podcast.